WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. J. Rodriguez, Brooklyn Connection. Yes, I'm ready. It's 7 a.m. here in New York City. Coming up next, What's Going On with Linda Sarsour.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Good morning to my WBAI listeners. This is Linda Sarsour on this beautiful Wednesday morning. It is 7:01 a.m. It's been steamy out here in New York. Weather's been really muggy. I feel like I'm in New Orleans out here. So hopefully everybody's going to have a really, really great day. We have a great show today. Have a lot of things to talk about. I don't even know how I'm going to keep track of everything we got to talk about. So many things have happened just over the last week since you and I last spoke last Wednesday. So we're going to have a great guest today. Hopefully there won't be any technical difficulties and our guest will be able to join us. Listen, Donald Trump got raided by the feds. A lot of people were waiting for that day, and we could talk about the Republican response, or at least the hypocritical Republican response, which is actually quite funny to me, but we could talk about that a little later. Many of you know, last week we spoke, and I took a flight right after the show, actually to Louisville, Kentucky, for a major announcement that happened in relation to the case of Breonna Taylor that I'd love to talk to you all about. And then there's another Breonna Grier out in Georgia. We'll talk about her story, just kind of keep people focused on the very important things and the horror that continues to be inflicted on members of our community. And of course, our Palestinian sisters and brothers. I spoke a lot last week about my experience being in Palestine, the love I have for Palestine, the joy I felt being there around my family. And here we are just a week later with an onslaught on the people of Gaza, 16 children murdered. So we'll talk a little bit about that. In the meantime, let's go to the newscast and see what's happening, see what else is happening out there. So we're going to the newscast now.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think every American should be upset about this.
Allies of Donald Trump rallied around the former president after the FBI raided his Florida home. The search is reportedly connected to documents Trump took from the White House at the end of his term. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy accused the Department of Justice of weaponizing politics.
And it's not just me saying this. You got the Democrat former governor of New York, Cuomo, upset about it. You've got the Democrat who ran for president, Yang, upset about it.
However, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a possible GOP presidential contender in 2024, had a different take.
It's fair game, and you just have to display probable cause to a federal judge, and you have reason to believe there are contents within that safe that would assist in proving a violation of the law.
A federal appeals court ruled Tuesday the House Ways and Means Committee can obtain his tax returns from the IRS, which Trump has refused to make public. Meanwhile, new polling from Monmouth University found the House January 6 investigation has not moved the needle on Trump's favorability, which stands at 40%. In Tuesday's primaries, in Connecticut, three Republicans are vying to challenge Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal. Results are not expected soon, as counting there is handled on a town-by-town basis. In Vermont, Democrat Brenda Seigel will face incumbent Republican Phil Scott in the governor's race. Congressman Peter Welch is projected to win Vermont's Democratic Senate primary in the race for retiring Senator Patrick Leahy's seat. In Wisconsin, the Democratic primary to face Republican Senator Ron Johnson in the fall is expected to go to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And the GOP primary to face Democratic Governor Tony Evers is too close to call between Trump-backed Tim Michaels and former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish. The CHIPS and Science Act was signed into law, which U.S. Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo says will help create a semiconductor ecosystem in the United States.
Our over-reliance on foreign manufacturers is a real vulnerability. But as has been said, that's going to change.
The White House says the measure will lower costs, create jobs, and strengthen supply chains. Some Republicans supported the $280 billion measure, while others argued it would raise taxes and worsen inflation.
We're showing the world the United States of America can still do big things.
President Joe Biden formalized U.S. support for Finland and Sweden to join NATO as the two countries seek to bolster security as Russia invades Ukraine. More monkeypox vaccine is being used as the government tries to boost its limited supply. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky.
While additional vaccine effectiveness studies are underway, we at CDC are very much recommending that people who get vaccinated continue to take steps to protect themselves from infection, especially if they have only had a single dose.
There are nearly 9,000 cases of monkeypox nationwide. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I told you folks, there's a whole lot going on, and today we're going to have a great show. It's 7:06 a.m. here in the New York City area. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day outside. I'm really excited. Today is a good day for me. My daughters and my mom are traveling back from Palestine, so pray that they get here safely this evening. I am joined by someone who I've known for a really long time, and I've told folks at WBAI I'm going to introduce you to some of the most brilliant people that I know, and that's the joy that I have doing the show every Wednesday morning. I have with me today Angelo Pinto Esquire. He is an attorney here in the larger New York City area, and really he's a national figure specifically around issues of criminal justice reform. Many folks remember a few years ago, there was a campaign here in New York called Raise the Age, and it was a campaign looking to raise the age of criminal responsibility in New York State. At the time, I had learned that New York State was only one of two states where we were still charging 16-year-olds as adults, and a lot of times folks hear about the campaign and see the kind of wins that we get and don't know who's behind the work, who's hustling on the back end. And Angelo was the leader of the Raise the Age campaign here in the New York area. He's also one of the co-founders of Until Freedom, a racial justice organization that many of you know that I'm a part of and was working for over 2 years and continues to work on the Breonna Taylor case and many cases of police violence around the country. So I want to welcome you this morning, Angelo.
Thank you for having me. It's early, but I'm glad to be here.
Angelo and me ain't morning people. And it's crazy that I ended up getting the show at 7 o'clock in the morning because I'm not a morning person. I start, you know, my mind starts hustling around 9:30. So I'm also just as shocked as you, Angelo, that I get up every Wednesday morning this early to do the show. So I was actually telling folks last week, Angelo, about how I was about to get on a flight that Wednesday to go to Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, you and I get the calls from Tamika all the time that tell us, pack your bags, we got places to be. And, you know, we knew there was going to be some sort of announcement related to the murder of Breonna Taylor at the hands of the Louisville Metro Police Department. But the crazy part is we actually didn't know exactly what that announcement would be. It was the information was kind of embargoed. So I would love for you to share with our listeners, you know, what that announcement was, you know, how you felt when you heard the initial news announcement from the Department of Justice. I think some of our listeners might be following, but for those that don't know, tell them what happened last week around Breonna Taylor.
Sure. So like you said, we got a call from Tamika Mallory that we needed to be in Louisville, Kentucky. And she didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but she had got word that it was important that we be there. So, you know, we packed our bags, flew out to Louisville, and then we got on the ground and waited for this announcement. And what we found out was that, you know, the federal government, the DOJ, was going to prosecute four of the officers, Louisville officers, who were involved in Breonna Taylor's death. What happened, of course, was there was a federal investigation where they were looking into all the surrounding circumstances pertaining to her death. And what they found, or, you know, one of the key pieces of evidence they were able to procure, was that one of the officers was willing to testify. And I'm sure at some point shared some information that she had been involved in some wrongdoings by the department. One of the things she shared was that, of course, some of the details around the warrant that were faulty, particularly with regards to them knowing that the particular home in question, Breonna's home, was not involved in some of the criminal activities that a number of other homes that they were procuring warrants for was involved in. So they knew that the warrant, in fact, was faulty. The other piece was after the actual no-knock warrant was executed, of course, the officer shoot dozens of bullets into Breonna's home, killing Breonna Taylor, that officers had to follow up meetings and conversations where they got their stories together because of some of the wrongdoings that took place during the execution of the no-knock warrant, and basically conspired to lie to the government officials, to have one single story so that other officers would not be implicated, particularly with regard to criminal charges. All of that information eventually was discovered during the course of this investigation. And as a result, there was a decision to prosecute four of the officers. And the big kind of piece that I think transformed this investigation, which is something that you rarely see pertaining to law enforcement, was that one of the Louisville police officers was willing to cooperate, meaning they were willing to testify, and they're willing to testify that these things actually occurred. So oftentimes, particularly when officers may be conspiring, or people believe officers are conspiring to do something illegal or something that's criminal, we don't have that information. We don't have an officer who's willing to corroborate or testify to that. And in this situation, we do, which is a huge, I think, turning point for the investigation, of course, giving them the ability to now charge these officers. But in addition to that, I mean, it gives us a deep insight into the Louisville Metro Police Department. And not just that, but how some of these officers engage with each other and their kind of illegal activity. So that is the gist of what we kind of walked into. Of course, it was just a huge victorious day because we were there with Tamika Palmer, Breonna Taylor's mother, her family, all the attorneys involved in the case. And it was a moment for, I think, the community of Louisville and even the state of Kentucky to celebrate. And also for activists, organizers, and frontline folks who've just been doing the work around Breonna Taylor to say, we got a victory. Because oftentimes one of the other challenges is that we're out there doing the work. And of course, getting officers prosecuted, charged and convicted is not an easy task, and oftentimes we fall short around the country. But to have a win like this and to know that officers are going to face some accountability and repercussions for their actions is a huge win.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, even after we heard the news, like, it took me maybe 2 days even after we got home to be like, wait a minute, some cops got charged. Like, I couldn't believe that we got to this point, but I think it's important for our listeners to know that this is what organizing does. And a few months ago, we at Until Freedom had launched a petition, because a lot of times when, you know, we watch these cases unfold, you know, we went to Louisville, Kentucky, we lived out there, we organized, you know, we mobilized, and there was a lot of disappointments. And Attorney General of Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, is probably the biggest disappointment of this entire situation. And, you know, the year anniversary passed, you know, we're coming up on the second anniversary of Breonna Taylor's murder. And we were like, look, the feds got to get involved. Like, if the state of Kentucky is not going to do their job, if the local officials of Louisville are not going to do their job, the feds got to do their job. And so we launched a petition. And in a few days, over 20,000 people signed a petition. I know a lot of people see a lot of petitions online. They say, you know, does my signature matter? Like, does this really do anything? Are people just trying to, you know, build their lists? And, you know, for some people and some organizations, that might be the case. We don't launch petitions every day. And we knew that in this particular case, it could be something that could move the Department of Justice. And so we, in a few days, got over 20,000 signatures, and Angelo and I and our colleagues, my son Lennon and Tamika Mallory and Attorney Crump and Breonna's mother and some other folks and friends and allies of ours actually took boxes of those signatures to the Department of Justice. We literally went outside the Department of Justice, went inside, and they said, oh yeah, well, you don't have an appointment. And we said, listen, we're not leaving here till somebody comes downstairs and takes these signatures. And in fact, they did. They sent us two attorneys, came outside, we have the video, and took those petition signatures. And that petition was demanding that the Department of Justice charge police officers in relation to Breonna's murder. And Angelo, you know, is telling the story. And I just want to reaffirm that the original information that came out of LMPD was that there were these suspicious packages that were going to Breonna Taylor's apartment, and that the post office, you know, had seen these suspicious packages. And that was one of the key pieces of information that LMPD officers use, specifically Detective Joshua James, to go and get a no-knock warrant that was signed by a local judge, by the way, who is now running for re-election. And we hope, of course, she loses, because she's part of the story as well. And so then the meetings that Angelo's talking about is that the post office saw that in the media, that it was that the police officers were saying, oh, well, there were suspicious packages going from the Postal Service to Breonna's apartment. And the Postal Service was like, I don't know what y'all talking about. That ain't right. We never said there were suspicious packages. That's not accurate information. In fact, that's false information. And so that led the police officers to then start having these secret meetings in a garage, where they were like trying to respond to the media, basically saying that the U.S. Postal Service is on the record saying that this idea of packages and suspicious packages actually was not a thing. And so we're watching in real time now a police officer telling the Department of Justice, after they finally were like, okay, fine, we're going to investigate and see what we could do here, that there might be more things that come out. I mean, once one police officer testifies, now you have four police officers who are being charged. Everybody's going to want some leniency. And so that means that we may hear about more police officers who are involved. But for now, we got four. So one thing that I think is important, Angela, for us as organizers, is that a lot of times, you know, like you said, this was a big announcement for us. And it was, you know, for me personally, like, I saw everybody, I think even, you know, their people got teary-eyed. Even the men in our group were teary-eyed. Yeah. And it was a big win. But, you know, as a lawyer, I think it's important to explain to people, charging the cops is the first step. And there's much more to go in this process. And I think if I'd love for you to share about what we're going to kind of be working towards, and also why people still got to stay in the know and stay focused on this Breonna Taylor case till we get to that end of accountability.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a process. Actually, the same day as the DOJ's kind of announcement, press conference, and all this news was coming out around these officers who were being charged, they also had a call with attorneys that we had the privilege of getting on. And they were explaining some of their rationale around why they prosecuted or why they were prosecuting these officers. They explained, you know, what we just talked about. And a number of attorneys from around the country who were on this call. And one of the things, you know, during the course of the conversation that I asked folks was that what do they feel like, or what do they see the timeline for this case being? And, you know, they basically went through the traditional kind of litany of events that takes place after someone decides to prosecute. And essentially what happens now is that these officers, which has happened, these officers have all been formally charged. And now the officers will decide if they will take a plea, if any, right? So they get to decide if they're going to plead guilty, if they're going to plead innocent, right? And potentially go to trial or potentially try to strike some kind of plea deal. So that's essentially the phase we're in now. And it could potentially take a year or two for those things to get hashed out before we find ourselves either at a trial or potentially at a, you know, a plea hearing where we're finding out what an officer's actual sentencing is. We believe, and I think, you know, there's good reason to believe, and folks have heard that at least one of the officers, I think was Kelly Goodlett, was going to plead guilty, right? Because she is the cooperating officer in the midst of all that's transpiring under this investigation. So it's possible that proceedings, particularly with regard to her, will happen a little bit more expeditiously, because she is likely going to, or at least people believe she's going to plead guilty. And as a result, you know, her proceedings should be faster. As far as the other three officers, Joshua James, Kyle Meany, and Brett Hankinson, it's unclear what they will do. And I believe, particularly because of the ways in which most of them had tried to maintain their innocence, that it's unlikely that all of these officers will plead guilty. And then from there, we're looking at a trial. And then after the trial, depending on if they're found guilty in the trial, we'll get some sentencing. So, you know, I think folks should be mindful that we are in for a year, maybe 2 years of proceedings and events leading up to kind of a disposition that will finalize where we are with this trial. So I think, you know, as we know, in these moments, things will ebb and flow, folks will forget, and we kind of have to keep the drumbeat and the story alive so that people remember, stay tuned in and vigilant. And I think most importantly, and you mentioned it earlier, Linda, Daniel Cameron is still active, right? Daniel Cameron still holds his position. He's kind of a good individual for us to put our sights on and our paws and claws on during, you know, the time of this investigation, as we're kind of waiting in a bit of limbo, because he had the ability to prosecute, but declined to do so, or felt like they didn't have enough evidence to indict officers. And the fascinating thing about us getting to the point of a DOJ investigation and our prosecution, one, as you mentioned, we had to continuously escalate. And we talked about how important it is for people to see the timeline of events from, you know, Breonna Taylor being murdered, to attorneys getting involved, to us finding out, and all of the activity that happened on the ground to get us to the point where the Department of Justice is coming in to prosecute. I mean, we had to go through layers, and actually the government hierarchy, where individuals were declining to do what they were supposed to do. Like, to go from a small city like Louisville to then ask the state of Kentucky to do something, and then finally the federal government having to go up the ladder of power nationally in order to get something done, is actually a lot. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, mm-hmm. it lets you know how hard it is to get justice in any single incident. Mm-hmm. And what it shows you is that the way the justice system exists at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level, it's virtually impossible for us to get justice on all these cases, because the individuals in power refuse to do what they're paid to do. Mm-hmm. Someone like Daniel Cameron refuses to prosecute officers when there was compelling and robust evidence to do so, right? So the great thing in this case is that the Department of Justice is saying, hey, Daniel Cameron, you failed. So we're going to come in and do the job that you should have done. But the challenge is when you're looking at cases around the country, dozens of cases, as we know, are happening daily, and there's always a new case kind of jumping into things week by week, that you're dealing with a mammoth issue that requires a lot. I mean, we literally had to move to Kentucky to make this happen.
No, we
sure you're
did.
Dealing with a mammoth issue that requires a ton of energy. And it really speaks to our need to restructure, reimagine, and recreate the system. But first and foremost, to get individuals like Daniel Cameron out of office.
I mean, for me, Angelo, not only one part of me always thinks that I would have rather Daniel Cameron not even try to do anything at all, except he did try something. And it was the most offensive thing. Like, I couldn't, until today, I couldn't even imagine what was going through his mind, that he would be so callous. He actually did convene a grand jury, if you remember, and he tried to charge one of the police officers, Brett Hankinson, or at least brought some charges to the table that he called wanton endangerment. Mm-hmm. And he was the charges were about Brett Hankinson shooting bullets into the walls of another apartment building that I was actually the apartment building of the white neighbors, even though were bullets in other people's neighbor, walls, including most of whom were black neighbors. And so Daniel Cameron created a sham grand jury and came out with some bogus charges. And he was basically putting more value on some ceilings and walls than he was on Breonna Taylor. And that for me just kind of took it to a whole nother level. And so as folks are listening here to Angelo Pinto Esquire of Until Freedom, and he talks about setting our eyes on Daniel Cameron, let's just say that Daniel Cameron has been talking about running for governorship of the state of Kentucky and over our dead bodies, or at least we're going to die trying, or that's maybe not die trying, but we're going to try hard. We're going to do everything that we can to block Daniel Cameron from ever becoming the governor of Kentucky. To think that after all of this that you have done and the things that you didn't do that you were supposed to do, and the trauma and grief that you added to Tamika Palmer and her family over Breonna Taylor, that you think you're going to just stroll into the governor's office is just ludicrous. So we just want to make sure people know that you got to stay tuned, not only for these trials that will be coming up, because we got to keep the momentum and mobilize people around these trials, but also mobilize people and build political power and send Daniel Cameron a message that cowards don't get to be governors of states. And that's just how we're going to be operating from now on. So it's 7:27 a.m. here in the New York City area, and we are on WBAI. Talking about a lot of stuff that's been happening. I'm joined here by my colleague, friend, and brother, Angelo Pinto Esquire. We've been just discussing the recent announcement around the police officers that were charged in relation to the murder of Breonna Taylor. Many people didn't see this day coming, but we worked for this day. So we wanted to share our, a little of joy with you, because I'm not going to lie to you. I was sad, and it was bittersweet, but I did feel a little joy, especially for the family of Tamika Palmer. And so before we kind of get to break, I wanted to share another story of another case that we're working on. And I think it's important for me to use my platform to tell stories sometimes that are not being told in the way that they should. And this is going to require us to have a much longer discussion on a future show where I'll be bringing some mental health professionals to have this discussion. But in the meantime, I want you all to know about another Breonna, Breonna Greer. B-R-I-A-N-N-A is her first name, G-R-I-E-R. She is a young woman, a single mother of twins in Georgia, who has suffering from mental health illnesses. And one day she was having kind of an episode, and her parents, the grandparents of her twins, are, you know, an elderly couple in Georgia, you know, trying their best for their daughter, but felt the need at the moment that it was such a chaotic experience that they didn't feel like they could handle it themselves or address the issue themselves, as their daughter was having a mental health episode. So they called the cops, and the Hancock County Sheriff's Department showed up, and they ended up arresting Breonna Greer. And Breonna Greer is, again, a young woman in her 20s. They arrested her and put her in a back of a sheriff's vehicle, did not put a seatbelt on her. Remember, she was handcuffed, no seatbelt, driving around. And this woman was moving around in the car, similar to what happened to Freddie Gray a few years ago. And then finally fell out of the car because the deputy didn't even lock the door, fell out of the vehicle. And eventually, a few days later, as she was in the hospital, she died. And then an autopsy came out a few days ago that showed that Breonna Greer died from blunt force trauma at the hands of the Hancock Police Department. It was because of their negligence that Breonna is not here today and that her twins do not have their mother. So, Angelo, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I mean, every day we're getting calls from around the country. Here we now have this Breonna case that we're working on. In fact, for those of you in Georgia, there's going to be a home going for her on Thursday at 11 a.m. And all that information is on the Until Freedom IG page, Instagram page, where you can find out all the details. And immediately following the home going, there will be a march to the Georgia State Capitol. Because at some point, enough is enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
So what are we going to do, Angelo?
I mean, I think, you know, the first things that come to my mind is that we have to build power politically and on the ground. We have to change the system, right, of how policing works around this country. Like, there's no way around that. And then we have to defund the police. Like, I believe that if we don't do those three things, we're in trouble. Right now, the police, as they exist, have way too much power. We were in Connecticut a couple of weeks ago because a gentleman named Randy Cox was paralyzed because in a similar situation. Right. And we know because we have been arrested before that when you get arrested by these police officers, they lock you in and they lock you in good. And they put the cuffs on tight. They strap you in the car or the paddy wagon tight. We know they do this because they don't want you to potentially have access to a cell phone. They don't want you to get out. Now, when officers decide that they're not going to do that, we also know that has a purpose. We know that these officers are moving very deliberate. So when they decide not to strap someone in, we know that oftentimes they're taking individuals on what they refer to as rough rides. And there's a history of these rough rides that result in very serious injuries of folks who are going on them. And Randy Cox and now Breonna Greer are the two most recent individuals who have been victims of this, as you mentioned, just similarly to Freddie Gray. And we're in a situation, as I said earlier, where police violence, police murder is happening literally across the country. And we're talking about on the heels of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Maude Arbery, these huge historic cases that now in many ways have been historic wins, at least for accountability, but it's still happening. Mm-hmm. It hasn't stopped. It hasn't slowed down. It may have escalated.
Yep.
So police terror, confusion, brutality, murder, and conspiracy has escalated on the heels of some of the historic responses to police violence. So what that means for me is that our strategy has to change, but it also has to escalate. But we have to build power, build power, build power, so that we mm-hmm. could defund and restructure the policing and justice apparatus as it exists in the United States. Because as we know, there's no justice for Black folks. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't come.
As you're talking, Angelo, you reminded me of something, which is actually a great segue into something I wanted to ask you about. Remember that time that Donald Trump was like, when you arrest them, you don't got to hold their head down, be rough with them. And yeah, I remember us just sitting back like, the Lord have mercy, this man. And word on the street is, I think it was the day before yesterday.
They were rough with him too, huh?
The feds rolled up on Donald Trump. And he got raided. Apparently he was like, damn, they even went into my safe. I mean, I don't know, Angela, what were you thinking when you heard that Donald Trump was raided by the FBI?
I said, there's a God in heaven somewhere. I said, you can't make this up. I said, wow. This man just left office not too long ago. And now the federal government, the FBI, is on his heels. Mm-hmm. But as we know, there's folks across the country who are trying to prosecute this guy and investigating him for all kinds of activities. The more and more I looked into what was taking place, I was like, so why are they at Mar-a-Lago? Why are they there on Donald Trump's heels? And I saw that they said some 15 boxes of classified information were taken out of the White House.
Lord right?
So this individual was taking information that are supposed to go to the National Archives, right? And the other thing I learned was that Donald Trump, during the course of his time as president, was trying to declassify tons of information, some of which he would post on Twitter, some of which people believe, right, a fool. So he would just post some of this classified pictures on Twitter. Some believe he may have just wanted for his own personal use. And then there were all of these accounts of him literally tearing classified information out of reports and keeping them or ripping them apart. And there's these reports of individuals literally having to tape together classified documents that Donald Trump just decided he would rip up like he's 4 years old. He just rips them up. And then some of these documents and these papers were found stuffed in the toilet. So not only was some of it just, I'm sure, negligence, stupidity, and ridiculousness, but some of it was an intentional effort to either suppress activity or information that I'm sure potentially implicated him. Now, why this man would decide to take 15 boxes, I mean, not 15 folders, 15 boxes of classified information to his home, either shows that he just doesn't care about law and order, doesn't think it applies to him, and or he has some tremendous things he wants to hide or share with people who potentially don't love the United States, right? Mm-mm-mm. So this is what we're dealing with. And imagine, most of the time the federal government is not trying to go after a former president, right? So in order for something like this to happen, what's taking place is very serious. Mm-hmm. What's taking place is potentially a national threat to the country.
And the real poetic justice here, I'm sorry, this is really something. The poetic justice is that the head of the FBI is the guy that he hired, appointed. Right. I'm telling you, like you said, you can't even make this stuff up. Folks, if you're listening, our lines are open, 212-209-2877. So our number here, if you want to talk to me and Angelo, is at 212-209-2877. We'd love to hear from you. 7:38 a.m. here in the New York City area. I know many of you are up and about, going to work. Some are just chilling the summer, drinking their cup of coffee. And I'm so excited and happy that you're here with me and Angelo. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about defund the FBI. That's another one.
Right.
We're going to talk about that right after this break.
Best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Another blessing y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Hey! Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey! Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
As the rhythm's designed to bounce with health and death arise. Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got the fight.
Man, Michael G, our producer, just literally transported me back to Palestine with that last number. And I love that song. And it's a very old traditional Palestinian song that's kind of talking to the Palestinians in the diaspora about coming home, that you don't need to go far to come back home. And it's a really beautiful piece, which, of course, it's so relevant in this time that we're in right now. Angelo. And I'm going to get to Palestine in a second. We do have a few callers at 7:42 a.m. here in New York City. Just to wrap up Donald Trump and getting raided by the feds, just to talk about the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, not to say that there aren't hypocrites in the Democratic Party, because me and Angelo know a whole lot about that. But just in reference to Donald Trump being raided by the feds, there's been some Republicans now who are literally like livid, like outraged about what the FBI did, and including, Representative Marjorie Greene Taylor, who just says stuff that, or Taylor Greene, who says things that are just outlandish. But it was so funny. I mean, I was in stitches yesterday just laughing at her. She was like, defund the FBI. I said, you know what, sis, you and I may at one point found a little place that we could just, you know, hang out. Because this one right here, I agree. And so I wanted to kind of ask you, Angelo, around like kind of you sitting back watching, you know, Republicans and those kind of Donald Trump supporters who are so outraged at the feds, who are the same people that literally are always back the blue, you know,
right,
respect authority, you know, you all a bunch of, you know, hoodlums running around, you don't want no law and order, and here's law and order happening, and they're like, defund the FBI.
These folks do whatever's good for them whenever it's good. And it shows you how white privilege works. It's like, as long as I'm in control of this thing and it works for me and my friends, we're all for it. But once, the moment it stops, it should go. And we're going to attack it with everything in our power. I mean, I'm like you on this one, because I'm like, let's defund. Let's do it together. Like this, since you feel like this is what we need to do all of a sudden, we surely want to do it. And since you feel like it needs to start at the top, hopefully it trickles all the way down to law enforcement around the country, because activists and organizers have been saying defund the police for quite some time now, and it really isn't happening. So it's so fascinating that they're saying this, but we know if they had control over the FBI and their folks and their cronies were in position, they wouldn't be saying this. So it's interesting, and it'll be fascinating to see how much traction this gets and how much power they actually put behind doing this. But I think really what they're gearing up for is their ability to really fight back and to kind of put a target on the back of the FBI and go after this administration, because they're not going to go down or go away without a fight. And I think they want folks to know it. And they're one of the things that I think they're good at is messaging. Like, they'll find a message, they'll spin it, and they'll use it and use it and use it. And this is, to me, an example of them doing just that.
That's right. So, you know, Angelo, I'm going to get, you know, every week I try to like consolidate as much as what's happening around me and things that are kind of I'm connected to. And so, as you know, there's been an onslaught on Gaza in the last few days. And, you know, it's been horrific to watch, especially the children who have been impacted by this. And so I wouldn't really be having a complete show if I didn't also say their names today before we take some callers. So I just want to, of course, reaffirm my solidarity with the people of Palestine and, you know, Angelo and the people that I work with. They are in also unequivocal solidarity with the Palestinian people. And I want to say the names of these children that were killed at the hands of the state of Israel, funded by our U.S. taxpayer dollars. Jameel Najimuddin Najim, 4 years old. Ala Abdullah Riyad Kadum, 5 years old. Mu'min al-Nirab, 5 years old. Hanin Abu Qayda, 8 years old. Hazim Salim, 9 years old. Ahmed al-Nirab, 11 years old. Jameel Ihab Najim, 13 years old. Muhammad Yasir Nimr al-Nabihin, 13 years old. Dalia Yasir Nimr al-Nabihin, 13 years old. Mohammed Hassuna, 14. Hamid Haydar Najim, 16. Nazmi Fayez Abu Kersh, 16. Ahmed Walid al-Farram, 16. Muhammad Salah Najim, 17. Khalil Abu Hamad, 18. And so if you notice from some of those last names, some of those are brothers and sisters. Some of those are cousins. Some of them were the only children to their parents. And so I just want to make sure that people understand what is happening. There's a, of course, this happens often to the Palestinian people, but the fact that there is no mercy even for children. And I want to say this really quickly, just, and we're going to talk more about Palestine. And we've actually had a whole show about Palestine in the past, and we're going to do this again. But I just want to remind people, and this is why platforms like WBAI and having voices like mine is important, is that there's a lot of propaganda out there. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that the Israeli government has the most expensive artillery and weapons in the world. They have precision missiles where they could target people directly. They could target sites directly. The fact that they choose to bomb civilian neighborhoods and apartment buildings, especially knowing there are women and children, of course, and elders, and even men, of course. I mean, men don't deserve to die either. Is just, again, reaffirms the brutality of the Israeli government. So I'm going to open the lines, Angelo. Because if I keep talking about this, I'm going to just, my blood starts to boil because I feel like it just keeps happening in a cycle. Let's see who's on the line.
Hi, it's Judith from the Upper West.
Good morning, Judith. Welcome to WBAI.
Come stand with us on Thursday with a list of those names with the women in black on Union Square across the street from Citibank. Come stand with us.
What time is that, Judith?
Huh?
What time?
5 o'clock. From 5 to 6, we stand there. So if you stand there with the names, that will be very good because we do it every week.
So women in black are out at Union Square every Thursday, and this Thursday at 5 o'clock in Union Square. I personally, Judith, definitely have to make it out there one of these days. But this Thursday, excuse me, I'm actually traveling to an international conference. And so I won't be personally able to make it, but I'm going to get the word out, and hopefully one of my people is there.
Maybe somebody else will come with that sign of all those names.
Now, yes.
The other thing I mainly call to ask is how soon can we go after Pompeo, who committed murder in Staten Island? these police that did the same kind of choking as the people that did George Floyd. The Staten Island police did the same thing. How come mm-hmm. they are not on trial for murder?
That's right.
So I'll get
that's
off the
right.
phone because that's a question, and I love you, and I want the other people to call. Take care. Thank you.
I love hearing your voice, Judith. Thank you so much for all that you do. You know, Judith is right, and I think Angelo said this earlier. I mean, Eric Garner was choked on video for the whole world to watch, and the police officers involved in his murder were also not charged. I mean, the least that we got was a firing of Officer Pantaleo specifically, who was the one that did the actual choking. But of course, that is never enough, and no cops have been held accountable in that case. Let's see who else is on the line.
Good morning. This is Rose.
Good morning, Rose.
Can you hear me? Good. Listen, I just want to make a quick comment on our FBI.
Mm-hmm.
They pick and choose what they're going to deal with. And unfortunately, anyone who's had anything to deal with police violence understands that you will not be heard. And it's just so good of you to put this program on today to discuss Ms. Taylor, because it just was so heartbreaking that the guy who actually did the shooting, he's not going to be part of the federal case. Isn't that a little weird?
So just to make one clarification, and you're absolutely right, Rose, that there are others, Mattingly and others, who were involved in the shooting, but there is one of the four police officers is Brett Hankinson. Hankinson was one of the cops that did the shooting. He actually did the most shooting. But to the point we are making here today is we hope that what happens is that more flies drop, because police officers don't want to go to jail. And if that means that they're going to have to rat on other police officers or have to tell give more details similarly to what the police officer who we believe is going to plead guilty is doing, cooperating, we might actually get more cops. As you remember from some of the videos, there were dozens of police officers that were out there and multiple police officers who engaged in the shooting and police officers who were involved in getting the no-knock warrant, which really was the essence of why police were even at Breonna's house in the first place. So I agree with you, Rose, that there's more police officers that were involved and they need to be held accountable. And let's just hope that this is the beginning. I don't know, Angelo, if you want to say something to that.
You know, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm traditionally of the mind, too, that in these situations, we don't get justice or accountability. And oftentimes folks who are prosecuting are negligent or at best, you know, reckless in how they put together charges, if they do at all, you know. But I think in this instance, you at least have a genuine effort to bring officers to justice. There's a genuine effort to really do a thorough investigation and ask the questions that you know need to be asked. I mean, to get officers or one officer to cooperate and to testify that officers were in a garage putting their stories together is huge. And what it at least speaks to is at least for once, some thorough investigation happening. So, I mean, I think we have to, at least for the Breonna Taylor family and for activists and organizers around the country, you know, claim that victory. But certainly, you know, time and time again, and usually what we see is that these offices and departments and institutions certainly don't do the kind of prosecution that we would like to see.
That's right. And so, you know, we don't have much time today, but next time, you know, we're going to take some more callers and really have more conversations around this. You know, like Angelo said, the work continues and the work around getting accountability for Breonna Taylor continues, and we can't let up. And I know that this keeps happening, and we have Breonna Greer, we have Pamela Turner, we have Randy Cox. I mean, every day there's a
Jalen Walker
case. Jalen Walker, you know, we still have a case out in Florida, Stanley Davis III, who was killed down in Florida a couple of months ago. And so there's these cases don't end. And I think with us at Until Freedom, really being able to take a case or take a few cases and kind of see them to at least some end is important to us. So that means you got to support the frontliners. I mean, a lot of people think that this just, the work just happens organically. You know, it takes resources to get to Louisville, Kentucky. It takes resources to mobilize people and bring people together. And so we're, you know, you can go to untilfreedom.com to learn more about what we do, what Angelo does, what our team does. And you could also give, you know, there's a Cash App Until Freedom. You can Venmo Until Freedom. You could go to their website and give untilfreedom.com. So let's, you know, use this as opportunity to continue to support, you know, frontliners who are doing this really important work. And, you know, what I will say is that there's a lot of things that are happening. And I like to, at least whenever I can, Angelo, I like to end our shows with some good news. And yesterday was the Minnesota primaries, the Democratic primaries. And Ilhan Omar was up against, you know, an establishment Democrat. And, you know, as you know, they've been going after Ilhan, and they were trying to defeat Rashida in the primary. They tried to defeat Cori Bush in the Missouri primaries. And I want to end the show by congratulating Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who made it out by the skin of her teeth yesterday. She's going back to Congress. So it's great to know that at least in the next, you know, 2 years, we have Cori Bush from St. Louis, Rashida Tlaib from, you know, Detroit, Dearborn, and Ilhan Omar from Minneapolis going back to Congress. We need those voices in all of our fights around immigration reform, around policing, around just foreign policy. So it's good to know that our sisters are going back to Congress. So, folks, I want to thank Angelo for being on with me today. You can follow Angelo on Instagram at Angelo Pinto ESQ. And he's also on Twitter at AngeloPinto720. Follow him. He's a brilliant mind. He's speaking around the country. He does podcasts. Of course, he's does his own lives and is on the front lines with us at Until Freedom. Make sure you follow him. Support the work that he's doing, both at Until Freedom and beyond. And Angelo, we got so much work to do, so I'm probably going to see you on the road sometime soon. Thank you so much coming on.
See you on the front line, Linda. Thank you for having me.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Women in Black at Union Square, Thursdays at 5 p.m. over this commercial-free, listener-supported radio station. 62 years of commercial-free broadcasting. Those of you who are able to make a contribution, please call our pledge line right now at 212-209-2950. The reason why I played that piece of music from Palestine, I looked at it and I saw it.